Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, we're back, Sachs and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. A lot of crazy things going on there. SP Futures up 29. That's not crazy. NASDAQ Futures up 130. We're down a little bit yesterday. We can't have that. We have a president fixated on the market. We have rich people running the place. Market's going to continue to go up, it seems. And everybody's happy. They're all genius investors and so forth. And life is good. What do you think, Carl?
Well, I suppose if you think you can outrun inflation, it is.
If you own stock or property, it appears you can.
No, you can't.
They're doing it.
No, they're not.
They're not?
No.
They're doing better than other people.
Well, okay. Yes. In relative terms, yeah, yes.
Stock market's up 20% in the last, not 20%, but 10% in the last 10 days. You outran inflation.
No, you didn't. How much of your wealth is in the stock market? How much of your disposable? Let's put it in different terms. How much of your disposable income is in the stock market?
A lot of people, a lot.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
Okay, for how long?
I have clients that $5 million at $4 million of it's in the market.
Okay. Okay, well, $4 million of it is in the market, and then they're going to retire at 65, right, or 67.
Or they already have.
Or they already have, right. And now they have to draw on that, right?
Okay.
Okay. Inflation is a compounded thing.
I, you know that there's no greater foe of inflation than me, but I'm saying the people who are on one side of the K are running ahead of inflation. People on the other side are getting buried by it.
Well, okay. You know, I have put this math up before, and even you fall for it.
Actually, no, I don't. But tell me how I do.
Well, you just said that this is in fact happening. No, it's not. And here's why. Okay. We all know that never having a serious drawdown in the stock market, never, doesn't happen, right? We all know that from history. It's never happened, right? That such drawdowns happen. You can't time them, at least, I mean, somebody always gets the call right when it occurs, all right? But in general, you can't time them. That you timed the last one does not in any way imply that the next one will be accurately timed by you. It will be by someone. But that's only because there's always somebody calling for it tomorrow.
Well, I, to a certain extent, always time it because I'm always protected for people.
I don't
time it, but I mean, I'm there.
All right, here is the point. Take a portfolio that has say $5 million in it, okay? And figure out what your reasonable safe draw on that portfolio when you are no longer working is, all right? Which is not very hard. That's a mathematical formula, right? With very high levels of safety that you will be perfectly okay out to any rational expectation of your remaining life. So let's say that I mean if you think that you might be one of those wild outliers and make it to 100, which is a wild outlier, by the way, Okay, so you set your draw rate there, and you say there's, you know, I'll end up leaving some to my kids, because probability is that by the time I'm 85, I'm going to be in the hole and being eaten by snakes. Fine. And then 2-3 years into retirement, there is a no BS crash.
All right. Which is what I'm trying to protect people from, but go ahead.
Well, okay. So there is a no BS crash. But in the meantime, you have a vacation house out in Aspen, and you have another one in Miami, because you like to ski in the wintertime, and but the rest of the time you hate snow, and your main residence is in New York City or Chicago or whatever. You know, York and Will Met. And you've managed to put together a lifestyle that you think is perfectly safe, but has a absolutely required draw rate of, say, $25,000 a month.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, half your portfolio disappears. If you do not immediately cut that draw rate, you're going to run out of money. And if you can't, because you've built a lifestyle that makes it impossible, you're done. And there are an awful, and the reason is simply that the only alternative, see, here's the problem I have with all this stuff, Chief, is that you can only put your economic surplus into the market. You can't put your entire earnings into the market, because you have requirements in order to, you know, you have to buy food, you have to buy somewhere to live, you have to buy, you know, transportation, you have to buy this, you have to buy that. These are mandatory things. At the same time, you have no control, even though a lot of people think they do, you have no control over the political environment. This insanity that's going on with healthcare, and has been going on for the last, you know, 30, 40 years, is a rapacious beast that, if we do not stop it, is going to destroy the government, is going to destroy everybody's portfolio. And nobody wants to take it on, because happy days are here today. Okay. These are all things that are going to collide sometime in the next couple of decades, during which most of us, we hope, are still here. And yes, you have your puts, okay, but they expire, they will have to be rolled down, and they will get increasingly more expensive as that occurs.
Which they are, by the way.
Which, yeah, gee, go figure, yeah. Right? And you know, you have the kind of stuff, you know, this move upward that we saw supposedly from war hopes, you know, FOMO, whatever have you.
War hopes, it's such bullshit. You start a fire, and every day that you think the fire is going to go out, the market goes up.
Last time I checked, you only put it out once, right?
Well, same thing happened through COVID. That wasn't that long ago. So I'm not talking about 1978. I'm talking about 3 years ago. Same thing happened.
I know. And yet here we are. Okay, you have to trade the tape you get. All right, so that it may or may not be the one that you think is sane. It in many cases isn't. But the only way that the average schmo can stay anywhere close to an inflationary environment.
By the way, that statement is where this argument sort of falls apart. But keep going.
All right. The only way that the average schmo can stay on top of an inflationary environment like this over long periods of time, and in the presumption is that you're never going to have the aw crap, okay, kind of thing that happened in 2008. It's never going to happen again. If you're right about that, or it happens after the bloke dies, it doesn't matter, right? Because, you know, his kids get stepped up basis and, you know, whatever. Okay, fine. But let's assume you're wrong about that. The problem is, unless you were in there with leverage on the way up, you cannot stay ahead of inflation, because you can't put your entire income in. You can only put
that's
in your...
That's the beauty of the margin loan.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful right up until there's a crash, and then there's this thing called a margin call.
Here's where your argument falls apart. I love arguing with people that I agree with. Here's your argument falls apart. Nobody gives a crap about the average Smoke.
I get that. And oh, by the way, they won't when it happens either.
No.
They didn't the last time. Why would they this time?
Well,
actually, they didn't the last two times that we've seen it.
All right, let me give you a couple other numbers that don't conflict with yours. By the way, yours are exactly accurate, and I happen to agree with them and feel the problem. But nobody cares because the people who you talk about and I talk about, nobody listens to. We're not on national TV. We should be.
Oh, I know.
So
but we're not.
Let's look at the K-shaped recovery. The average Schmo is in the middle of the K, hopefully, or on the bottom of the K, right?
Right.
All right, so on the top of the K, we have since 3-2-220, allegedly the start of COVID, I won't say the start of this fiasco because it really started in, I'm going to say 2000, accentuated in 2008, but that's an argument you and I won't even have to have. We both agree on that one.
Right.
Well, let's pick March of 2020, the start of COVID, when they closed the bars on St. Patrick's Day, a horrible day.
A
horrible day.
That was the one where, by the way, I was living down, partly here and partly in Florida, and they actually sent cops into some of the local places and forced them closed.
I can't think of a greater blasphemy on earth.
On St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So where do you suppose the S&P was?
Oh, no.
All right. Throw a number out.
Well, I'd have to actually go look because I don't want
to. You don't have to. I just did. 257.
Okay.
It's now 711. Inflation, you and I think will agree, not with the CPI dunderheads. Actually, not dunderheads. The CPI liars.
Yeah.
They think we're up, I don't know what they think we're up. Let's say, I'm going to say, really, we're up 50% in inflation. They're going to say we're up, 30?
Yeah.
20 maybe, somewhere in there. I could dig it up here in a second.
Yeah.
But the market is up 275%. So if you're at the top of the K.
Well, but you took Now, wait a minute. I just pulled up the SPX, and right in front of the crash is at 3370.
I'm talking about, I'm looking at 3-2-220, 2020.
Well, okay, where am I here? All right, well, in March, you're like down as in
all right,
the,
so let's start
the middle of the
crash. Let's start at 300. We're still up 220%.
I'm not arguing with that. Yeah, no, I know.
So, I mean, it's real hard to say to people, and I have... a lot of clients, I don't have thousands of them, but I have a lot of clients, and there are people all over that K.
I know.
And I'm saying the people who run the joint are then the top end of the K.
Yeah.
They're not, I guess, it's like, I mentioned the other day, and I probably should have because I have clients that have all the stock, but you think the person in the last 3 months who has 10,000 shares of Chevron really has a right to bitch about gas up $1 a gallon?
No.
It's a question of where you are in the K, bud.
Well, it's and again, this is but okay, but that expansion that you have there is, I mean, most of that's multiple expansion. It's not actual earnings expansion.
I get it.
Okay, which by the way, the multiple on a stock. Is as it increases, is an expansion of the leverage in the company, as expressed in the stock price.
Understand.
Now that may or may not be truly accurate in terms of the actual leverage expansion within the company, but it is absolutely the market's expression of the expansion of what it believes.
Well, you see what we're doing here. I actually believe that things are worse than you're talking about. What I'm trying to explain is why we're not on national TV, why nobody listens to us.
Well, yeah.
Maybe,
okay.
Right? And they are two sides of the same coin, aren't they?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Because we're not, Jeff Bezos is not going to put us on his station.
Well, of course not.
No.
No.
Now, as to why he owns one, that's another story. But, Maybe we should get Eli on there. Eli's, nobody should deserve to be a censor except me.
Well, yeah, there's another one, right?
Yeah, so I mean, it's, but I mean, these numbers, they don't lie. And I'm with you that someplace along the line, and it won't come from our thieves. And actually my theme this morning a little bit, Carl. Oh, by the way, you're not going to be here Friday, so I reached out to Hal to see if he could switch. If he doesn't, why don't you hang in some with him today, and I'll try and get him on Friday as well. But that's procedural. Okay. I think somehow or another, this is going to have to come from some outside. I agree with you. There's going to be a reckon. You know,
there's a reckoning.
It's like somebody who says we're gonna take a stagecoach to Oregon.
Right.
Which people did, by the way. And somebody says, you know, the thing keeps going uphill from here to Oregon, and yet somewhere Oregon's flat to where we are now. There has to be some sort of a cliff or something somewhere along the way. And you and I keep talking about that, and somebody's on their 50th day slogging across the desert, or not the desert, but the Oklahoma summer, whatever the hell the thing was, Missouri summer.
Right.
They're going to get tired of listening to us. Doesn't mean there's not the cliff coming.
Right.
And they're going to say, what are you talking about? I got the route that looked like no friggin' cliff to me. But I think somehow where is... That's what is so fascinating about the industry. You know we're heading towards some problem here. The problem is not, you know, President Orange Man, and the problem wasn't Biden. The problem is somebody is kind of behind all this crap, and I don't know who the hell it is, and the rest of us are making it easy for them by fighting amongst ourselves. I actually heard a story yesterday that regarding people not paying taxes on tips.
Yeah.
And you might say, why in God's name would anybody do something like that? It's income like any other income. In fact, most tip people probably underreport, so the stuff that they do report, they probably certainly should be paid on, right? I mean, you know, that would be the layman's logical look at this, at least according to me, right?
Right.
So, I mean... Right. If you think, you know, we're talking about people that are low wage, we used to be, now that, well, Chicago and others are going to pay tip people the same amount of minimum wage as other people, which is kind of weird, but anyway, so we're talking about essentially low wage people that make a lot of their income from tips. And you know, a lot of the cash tips maybe go in the pocket, the ones that go on the card don't. And there's some rules that say you have to imply a certain amount of tip, you know, if somebody has a $100 dinner.
Right.
You can't say there's no tip. I don't know what you're supposed to say, 10% or 5 or something. There's some minimum. There's something.
Well, there's a bunch of fairly complicated rules in that. If that you essentially have to impute enough tips for the person to make minimum wage.
Well,
you can't
assume. You know, I guess I forgot a weirdo story, but I'll leave it there. The idea that. People who I'm going to say across the board, I'll be nice and say 20% of all tips are not reported as income. In some places it might be more than that, someplace less than that. I mean, a girl lives downstairs from me, worked at one of these high-end restaurants, she goes, we never see a cash tip. No, so she probably never, never is a long time.
In some cases that's actually true.
Yeah, I mean, it's rare. Plus, these places that don't take cash, well, I guess the waiter will take a cash. Somebody left.
I was going to say, the waiter will stuff a 50 in his pocket, trust me.
But the idea of why out of all the people in this world would you say that group doesn't have to pay taxes? And one of my clients yesterday, who's pretty damn bright, said to me, you know the reason why they're doing this, Chief? And I go, hit me with it. He goes, there's a group of people, left and right, while the rest of us keep fighting back and forth with each other like a bunch of morons, that are behind all this shit. They want a cashless society so they know what everybody's doing.
Yep.
And the tip people, the people who get tips are so dumb, or thought to be so dumb, that this year they're actually going to come clean and tell the government how much they're actually making.
Yep.
And they're not smart enough to know that if you've...
Not smart enough to realize that you're going to get it in the keystone.
Yeah. But if you've been reporting
right.
10 grand a year for tips, and all of a sudden this year you put down 20, and thinking you're not paying on the whole 20, you're an absolute idiot, because they know you've been cheating for the last 5 years.
Right.
And they're going to close that gap, whoever the they are. But the they isn't Biden, the they isn't Trump, the they is somebody. I was going to say,
maybe not tomorrow, but guaranteed it will happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the question is, who are these people that seem to operate, regardless if it's Biden, regardless if it's Trump? And you can say, if you're a MAGA guy, Trump's too smart for any of these people. That's bullshit. I mean,
of course it is.
Of course it is. I mean, the fact is, there's stuff going on here that doesn't seem to be even acknowledged by our elected officials, let alone fought about. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think that there's any chance that some of the MAGA and some of the woke people are having a beer tonight, representatives in Washington, saying, you know, I know we're fighting about this other stuff, but is anybody looking at this? Do you think anybody is having a beer tonight talking about that?
Oh, no. Well, I guarantee you nobody at any of the places I go is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm talking about representatives getting together for a beer.
Of course, different
sides of the aisle probably never talk about this. But, you know, you talk about going back in time. I mean, John McCain, when Teddy Kennedy died, and everybody's like, oh, man, the people in the MAGA, I hated Kennedy, you know, he couldn't get a girl to go off a bridge, all this crap. And McCain said, you know, as a committee chair, there was none finer. He always had the best people. If you're on his committee, he goes, I didn't agree with the guy on anything, but I always got my say. If he could possibly get what I wanted into the bill, he did. And by the way, when it was all over, he went out and had a beer. And he goes, and we could talk about stuff, you know, basically at the bar about all the stuff else is going on.
Yeah.
And he goes, there's none of that today. He goes, if somebody doesn't agree with you, you don't even listen to them.
Right.
You never get your say. He goes. He didn't disagree with me on anything, but he never disrespected me. He never didn't listen to me, and he never. By the way, he goes, once in a while, I won the argument.
Right.
But I mean, when you lose that, my question is, who are these people behind these people? You can't tell me that Trump, Vance, Hegseth are running the show. I mean, Trump.
Well,
I mean, he's running the show to the extent that, you know, he can tell the military. I'm saying all the stuff that, assuming we don't get in World War III, all the stuff that 10 years from now we're going to care about, I don't think any of these guys have thought up at all. And I don't think Biden did either.
Well, now, wait a minute. Now, see, I would disagree with you there.
I'm talking about currency flows, things like that.
No, I'm talking about the places that this... All right, I mean, let's... Since we're, you know, we're into the backstory, if you will, with all of this, when you really get down to it, right? I mean, the Pavlovian response over the last, you know, since this dust up with Iran started, is, I mean, I thought I'd seen all of it before, and of course that's been proved wrong. I'm thunderstruck by the fact that despite the inflationary impact, despite the supply chain disruption, despite all these things, by the way, 95% of that has not actually been seen yet in terms of flow through to the end of the chain, that is you and I. Why? Because the tankers that were in movement at the time that this thing started were still moving. They were out of the Strait of Hormuz. They were going wherever they were going. They were steaming their way to wherever that is. All of that continued apace for, and still has. Now, the problem now is that all those ships are in the process of making port and offloading their cargo right now. And when they do, reloading, going back to get more, is a problem. Right?
Yeah.
All right. So the disruption from all of this is, it's not even in the, I mean, all the only place you've seen it is at the gas pump, because the QM, of course, spiked immediately. And, you know, now it has come back in some. But the actual disruption, the actual commercial disruption of all of this, zero of that has yet been seen. Zero.
Well, to the extent I'm going to push back on that here. I think we have seriously offloaded, when I say offloaded, exported some diesel, the finished diesel to Europe and other places.
Well, here's my point. Have we started diverting, you know, our ships diverting over here to come get, well, yeah, they are, especially in the last couple of weeks, right? Is that flow beginning? Yes, absolutely.
I think the diesel flow was already happening. You're the one who brought that up, by the way.
It was.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's the reason that diesel it broke its pattern, you know, after 2008, where it was always cheaper during the summer months than gasoline, because it's the same thing as, it's chemically identical to home heating oil. It's the same crack. And as a result, nobody uses it for that purpose in the summer. Duh. And so as a result, you have a supply, you know, when you crack a barrel of oil, you get a certain amount of gas, a certain amount of diesel, a certain amount of kerosene, which is mostly what is jet
fuel. By the way, not to interrupt, how many, used to be, you know, when I was a ute, everybody in Northeast used home heating oil. Is that dropped a lot, or do they still use a lot?
Yeah, no, it has, because it's gotten prohibitively expensive. Okay, I mean, well, in the Midwest, it was very common, too. And, you know, when I was a ute, our home was heated by heating oil.
My grandmother's house had the huge tank in there, and they had the...
Well, we had my house.
Did you have the burners? Were your burners in the old coal-fired furnace?
No, we had an actual oil-fired furnace.
All these people had, they were all converted coal furnaces.
Oh, I know,
furnaces,
but there was a large tank down there, and during the oil shocks... When prices went nuts, right around that time, the town that I lived in, piped gas showed up near the street. And my dad did the math, and in 2 years, it was cheaper across just 2 years to yank out that oil burner and you know, pay to trench from the street up to the house to put the gas in, right? And you know, put a gas burning furnace in instead, which is exactly what he did. But, you know, and then that tank sat there for quite a long period of time. Finally, it was...
Oh, God, there's still got to be some in basements here.
Well, there, you know, I mean, eventually they had it, they remodeled the basement.
How many people use propane? It's still used a lot, right?
So around here, if you're not where there's a piped gas connection, it's, you know, it's that or heat pumps, right? And a lot of people around here have dual fuel setup, but the number of them, Chief, they have it set wrong, and the reaming they get every winter. I mean, I've fixed that for several friends of mine around here in this area that are off the piped gas area, and it's just a... It's a mathematical computation. How much did you pay for propane when you filled it, or nat gas every month, right? What, you know, how much are you paying per therm?
Well, if you don't have a gas line, it doesn't really make any difference. You're stuck.
Well, no. But I'm saying if you've got propane and dual fuel, okay, heat pump or propane, that where you set the cutover temperature between those two is the difference between saving money and getting bent over the table and rammed.
Oh, yeah.
And it's much worse with propane than it is with natural gas, because propane is so much more expensive.
It is. I mean, that's what I'm asking.
On a BTU equivalent basis, it is wildly more money than than piped gas is. And so, I mean, the number of people who have the heat pump set at, you know, like 40 cut over, that's insane if you're on propane. It's absolutely, Just go ahead and, you know, go buy a big jar of Vaseline.
Where should it be set?
Well, you have to have two figures for your heat pump. You have to have the coefficient of performance at 40, or the coefficient. You have to have two of them, basically. Okay, so you have to, because even though it is a curve, the curve's fairly flat. So if you have 2 points, you can extrapolate close enough. Okay, and so basically that's what you do, is you extrapolate for those 2 points, and then at that point you know how much you pay for electricity and kilowatt, you know, dollars per kilo, you know, cents per kilowatt hour, whatever have you. You know how much you pay per therm for the fuel, whether it's natural gas or propane, and you know the efficiency of the plant at a given temperature, and then it's just a slope intercept calculation. It literally takes 10 seconds with a calculator.
By the way, if you see Joel, let me know.
Joel just popped in, so I will shut up while he talks.
I'm assuming Kenny's going to be here, but why don't you pile in with Hal? I asked him to switch. Maybe he already did, but he never got paid.
He popped up on the muted, but popped up on the thing for a few minutes, and now he's gone.
Well, he'll be back. All right. Well, I'll swing over to Joel when we'll be back. SP Futures up 33, NASDAQ Futures up 144. Let's go right to Joel since we're a little over. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning. Good morning, Chief.
What's the word?
Bird is the word.
Your team lost the first round after being heavily favored, the Pistons, the Pistons.
Yeah. I mean, Orlando, first of all, is a much better team than their seed. They were injured a lot of the year. They're getting those players back. They're in the hole. And they lost at home. And if you go back to the Knicks series from last year, they have not won a playoff game in a long time. So there's definitely reason for concern. The reason I'm not super concerned is they had a long layoff, being the number one seed and the one playing. But that game on Wednesday is going to be important. But they do have one factor on Wednesday that they didn't have on Sunday.
You're going to be there?
Yeah, Chief, you are brilliant. Yes,
well, exactly. You're the man. You bring the vibes.
I'm going to bring the vibe.
The force be with you.
I am. So I'm excited. I'm excited to go to that. So, what do you make of they're in the hole. Cade, I mean, a lot of good players on Orlando. Detroit just has to buckle down, get to their game, play a little better defense, and we'll see what happens. But, Stephen A. Smith, Big Mouth, a lot of people have been calling for this, and so far, they're right.
Portland's given Denver everything they can handle. They beat them at home last night.
Yeah, yep, and there's upset cities. I mean, that's what you want to see.
Well, there's so much injuries flying around. One or two people make all the difference in the world. I mean, look at the L.A. series. What's Doncic is not playing, and neither is Kevin Durant.
Yeah, injuries. I mean, you don't like to use the injury card, but. I tell you, the West looks tough with OK City and Denver, Minnesota. You don't know if the Lakers can get hot. Also, going to the East, the Celtics getting healthy from the injuries. Long way to go for our Pistons.
Well, look at the two. We have to talk about the market here, but the tale of two franchises, the teams that have like a lot of depth. In both Boston and Indiana, their best guy went down almost the same day. Yet Boston's never looked back, and Indiana's can't recover at all from it.
No, that was a quick fall from grace. What's it, Tyrese Halliburton?
Yeah, you
hate to see something like that.
But Boston,
good old Rick Carlisle. I don't know, he's been around forever. He was with the Pistons. I don't know if you remember that. With the Mavericks, got him close. All right. Did he win it? I think he won it with the Mavericks.
He won something, yeah.
Yeah. But we'll see. So a lot of basketball yet to be played.
It's only Tuesday, and we've had two amazingly buy-the-dip opportunities already. One was Sunday night. Whenever you open low on war crummy news, you got to buy it. Now, yesterday, we had the nerve to be down a little bit, and, of course, we're up today. So just a steady day is a buying opportunity now.
Any day.
Yep.
Very. I don't know how to put it, Chief. I mean, we've seen a lot of different markets, but when there's no resistance, here. The market's incredibly resilient to everything that's going on. The news doesn't matter. Interest rates doesn't matter. We're coming into an earnings season, and we're seeing pretty good earnings so far. Tariffs, I don't know. Tariffs, schmariffs, no one talks about that much. Incredible. Incredible.
Well, I'm looking
here,
it's funny you should mention that. You're somewhat clairvoyant. I'm looking at the retailers could be in line for big tariff refunds. Now, nowhere on this page is it talk about getting any money to you and me. Guess who's number one on this list? This list is comprised by Citigroup. Tariffs returned.
Apple?
No, Walmart.
Walmart.
10.2.
I was actually going to say Costco, but...
$10.2 billion. That's a number. Your favorite place, Target, $2.2 billion. Home Depot, $540. What is it, Kohl's? KSS, $550. Gap, $400. Nike, wait a minute. Gap is $550 million. Nike, $1 billion.
Yeah,
there you go.
That hasn't helped Nike stock much. Boy, what a fall from grace. Now, yeah, it did get a bump.
Well, they haven't got the check yet.
Yeah, these companies are going to need a hell of a lot more than someone like Nike. Obviously, Walmart, that just adds to their coffers. And
well, so Walmart is not going to, they're not going to send a nickel to you who spent 500 hours at Walmart over the last year and a half.
No.
That's interesting.
Not giving it back.
That's really something.
Yep, and they finally got Tim Cook out at Apple. Been waiting for that for a long time. So market's really been anticipating. I mean, you got a lot of things look forward to here. You got potentials SpaceX and the IPO meeting with analysts this week. You got the Roche confirmation hearing.
Yeah.
And he just got a bevy of earnings, too.
Did you hear his comment? You're not as much of a conspiracy guy as I am, but his comment was, the Fed needs to stay in their lane to maintain their independence. What exactly does that mean?
Whatever Trump wants it to mean.
Evidently.
I don't know. But, we'll see. I mean, we'll see. Our inflation numbers are due early next month. Next month.
Do you look at them to see how much people are lying?
No, it doesn't show that, Chief.
Do you see, I don't know, you weren't on yesterday. This weekend, I didn't get to read the whole agreement. So I'm going to go with the news, which, is dangerous. Evidently, and I can't figure out how many of these people, what these people do, there's 6,500 contract employees at Midway. Now, we're not talking about O'Hare. We're talking about Midway. I can only imagine what they're talking about. It must be janitors, people who clean the planes. I mean, 6,500 is like a lot of people. Even if it's a 24/7 operation, you're still talking, 2,000 of them working at any given time. So, whatever. But evidently, Joel, they must have been stuck on minimum wage. Or maybe some were making more, which is where this thing kind of falls apart. But the bottom line is, according to the news, everybody got an immediate raise from $15 to $17. And will be going to $18 a year from now. Now, how long they've been fighting this? Minimum wage just went up to $15. From then on, it's going to be increased by the CPI. Now, I know my views on that. What could you possibly, I don't know what else you'd use, but what manner of, does anybody think that going from $15 to $17 puts anybody in the ballpark of being able to live now? And by the way, going back 30 years, if you'd have been, your increases had been on the CPI, what bridge are you living under? I mean, what are we talking about here? How could somebody be dumb enough to propose that in the contract? Using CPI for somebody's wages.
I can't
imagine
6,500 people working at Midway. I mean, did they build 10 more runs? I mean, that place was a dump when I used to.
Well, they must be talking about everybody who works in all the restaurants and the news. I have no idea. It seemed like an amazing number to me.
I don't know, Chief. That's a question that needs to be answered. But those wages, you're right, working at that. With a family or independent, we'll see.
That's $17 an hour is $34,000 a year. Well, what does that get you?
Not much, Chief. But all right. Well, I let you know I'm out next Tuesday.
But I'll be on your show next Tuesday.
and you're going to be on with the Presters. Yeah. So always. All right. So I'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
All right. You take care of yourself. Do we have Mr. Kenny?
Yes, we do.
We do. We do.
Kenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Are you in country, in state?
I'm up in Jacksonville, actually. I had to come up for a business meeting, so I'm just outside of Jacksonville in a town called Punta Vedra, Florida, which is just on the coast. It's beautiful.
Now, do you use your propeller jet for those short hops, or are you always on the jet?
No. I drove. It's 3.5 hours from where I live, right up 95, straight shot. I could let go of the wheel and just go straight. It's all I need to do.
Well, of course you can let go of the wheel. You have a driver with a hat on. You're in the back seat.
You're killing me.
Well, you know, I was thinking of you when I saw watching the Masters. And, boy, you sure know who they think their clientele is. When I saw a Maybach commercial.
Right.
What percentage of even the Masters audience could possibly afford a Maybach?
Well, there's probably a lot of them of the Masters audience that could afford a Maybach,
well,
I'm sure.
10%?
Five? Yeah. No, I'd probably say 10% of them. Sure. I think they could.
When I first saw one of those, it was long.
I mean,
time
not even sure how much does a Maybach even cost. I have no idea what it costs.
It's got to be quarter mil, I would think. But maybe.
Yeah.
But you know, now people drive them themselves. The first time I saw one of those, I was in the. I think I was doing the first look. We had a client that was the head of Illinois Chest, whatever that was, Illinois Lung Association or something. And we always bought tickets and went to the tuxedo thing. And they had the Maybach, first time I ever saw one, but it was, at that time, it was kind of a successor to the Mercedes limousine. It was a big car, and the idea was that you, who owned one, or me, sat in the back seat with a reclining chair and a computer and everything.
Right.
We weren't supposed to drive the damn thing.
Yeah, somebody drove it.
But now it looks they're like regular cars.
I will say it's interesting when I go to Palm Beach. You see them around. They're like they're like regular cars down at Palm Beach. So there's plenty of people that own them for sure.
So I wonder how much nicer they are than a regular expensive Mercedes. It must be a lot nicer.
I don't know. I've never been in one. I have no idea.
You bring them up to Jiffy Lube for an oil change? I don't think so. But can you imagine if you drove into Jiffy Lube, one of those things with the guy? Would the guy say, "What is this thing"?
I know. Could you imagine?
So what do you make of this market? We've had two buy the dips. One was when we opened down Sunday night. Now yesterday, we had the nerve to not be up. So,
well, this morning futures are up big. I think the Dow's up 275. Right, the Nasdaq's up another 100 and change. I think it's very interesting. I think what's happening is that people, investors, and traders, and even the algos are looking through the geopolitical noise, and they're concentrating on. You know, there was some good earnings. United Health blew it out of the water. GE Vernova blew it out of the water. And so I think they're really starting to focus on the stuff that ultimately, in the long term, prices stocks. Right? Geopolitics, as you know, creates short term chaos, but in the long term, doesn't really price stocks. And I also don't think that the world thinks that it's going to come to this horrific end. I think that Iran's going to come to the table ultimately because they're going to be forced to, and that there'll be, a solution. Is it going to be today, tomorrow, this weekend? Probably not, but it's probably moving in that direction. And I think that's what the market's telling you.
It's so funny the big news, the noise, and then the other news. And we have people that are telling us how strong we are because we're threatening to, blow up bridges in Iran. And last week we totally dropped the story that it appears that despite all our saber rattling against Cuba, that Russia essentially sent a naval escorted tanker or two into Cuba right under our nose and we didn't touch them. Everybody thinks we're stronger than we've ever been. I'm wondering if we're actually weaker, Kenny.
I didn't see that headline. Did that just happen
this week? Yeah, this week.
No way. I missed it completely.
Well, the story is that a Russian tanker that we've been playing footsie with for a while finally pulled into Cuba and offloaded. But the story from various places is the thing might have been shattered by like a submarine and a destroyer or something. I mean, it's amazing what you hear and what you don't.
Yeah.
But evidently, they did land. I mean, the tanker got there. Now, whether or not there was a submarine behind it, who the hell knows? I don't. But I'm like, essentially under our nose, no, that'll never happen. They did.
The tanker got there with, what was it, an oil tanker?
Yeah. And one of the big tankers they got out of the Strait of Hormuz was a Chinese tanker, and nobody touched. So we're blowing our horn all over the damn place. I wonder if everybody's just laughing at us.
Well, I'm not sure that they're laughing at us. I think there's, you know, at some point you got to, you know, you can't continue to completely disrupt the world. You got to give a little bit, I would imagine. You know, you certainly don't want the people of Cuba to be suffering any more than they're already suffering.
Oh, what do you mean? That's exactly what they want.
Well, the Cubans do. The government does. But, you know, I don't think, you know, the Reds. Do you really think Americans want the Cubans to be suffering? No.
I think our president, he's the one who put the blockade up.
Well, he's putting the blockade up around, once again, around the government to try to get them, force them to come to the table and, you know, become more participating in the world, right? And stop their.
How are we doing with saving the people of Iran?
Well, we're not doing too good there at the moment yet. Although we're not just haphazardly bombing them, so no one's getting destroyed that way.
Well, a bunch have died.
Certainly a bunch have died. Yes, I understand that, and I'm not downplaying that at all. I think a lot of them have died, not necessarily because of what we've done. A lot of them have died only because of what the Iranian government has done.
I'm not a fan of those guys, but
no,
the idea that we blew up a school with girls in it, and oh, by the way, but that's okay. Those guys killed 20,000 people.
Well, you know, I think that's right, and I'm not.
I know you're not doing it.
By no means am I saying that, you know, I don't know how that happened. I don't know when it happened. I mean, I know when it happened. It happened right at the very beginning, but I'm not sure how it happened that they would have blown up a school. And I'm not making excuses for it at all. But I think what they, you know, clearly what they want to do is they want to break that regime, and they want the country to stand up and you know, have a coup, right? Take it over and throw them out. Which I think ultimately a lot of people want, right? The Gulf states certainly want it. The Gulf states, you know, are quietly sitting there cheering on what we've done because you know, they've been bullied by Iran for years, 50 years. What's it, 47, 50 years that they've been bullied by Iran. And so I think on the one hand, they're happy that we went in and did it. On the other hand, you know, they'd like to see it now come to an end so that commerce and business can go on as usual.
Well, I think there's some to that. I just don't. When you do this stuff without really a plan, I mean, look what we did in Iran. We took out, Iraq. We took out Saddam Hussein. But guess what? We had nobody after him. We're better off with the guy there.
Yeah, yeah. I actually have to pay attention. I'm not even sure who's in charge of Iraq right now. They have to be U.S. friendly. No,
I don't know about that. But it's still all splintered.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole area is. I mean,
that's the problem with the Middle East, right? Because they're all different. They're all different sects of the Muslim religion, and so they don't even get along, right?
Without a doubt. I mean, then you have, you know, Israel, who they're our best ally and all those kinds of things. But every time something happens, they grab some other space. I mean, someday people over there are not going to be happy with them.
No, I agree. And there's already people clearly that are not happy with them. But I also think that, you know, they can't just sit there while you know, some of those countries in that part of the world sit there and call for their complete destruction and demise. That's not right either. Come on.
Well, I understand that, but calling for something and then using that as a excuse to... I mean, you know, we've had people that are bad-mouthing us, and yet we're on our, what, eighth country since this guy's been in office that we're bombed? Boy, you know, what is it, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me? I mean, what are we doing here? I just wonder, when this stuff happens, you never, what was the guy in the author? Was it Shakespeare? You know, cry havoc and let loose the dogs of war?
Yeah.
You never really know where it's going to land.
That's right. You don't really know where it's going to land. You hope that there's a plan and that it lands where it's supposed to land. But I suppose that's always the wild card, right?
Well, yeah. Question for you. I mean, Carl was just on, and he's tracing the inflation log, and he's tracing, and we were trying to have a conversation. Well, we were having a conversation regarding the market and pouring money into the system and asset prices going up. And what everybody, I think, agrees with, we have some sort of a K-shaped recovery.
Yeah.
And whether you're doing good or doing bad kind of depends on where you are in the K.
And correct.
And I did a little bit of research here for 2 seconds, one big research, that if you happen to have assets, if you own Mar-a-Lago or someplace like that, not downtown Chicago commercial building, but if you own assets, being houses, being all kinds of things, or you own stock, you are ahead of this inflation thing. If you don't, you're seriously behind.
You're behind. Correct. But that's always been the case, right?
Well, but not to this extent. You're in a market maven. You might have, at the beginning of March 2020, right before COVID, again, before they closed the bars on St. Patrick's Day, which will go down as history's one of the most grievous things anybody ever did. Where do you think the S&P was?
I have to go back and look. I forget. Was it in the high threes?
It was in the high twos.
Oh, really? The high twos?
Well, it might have been down a little bit there. So say three.
Yeah.
I got it at 257 on 3.2, but I think we'd already been down a little bit there. Say three. Well, now it's 7.11. So that's up
225%. Right.
Inflation, I think, is about 50% since then.
Yeah.
I think you'd probably agree with that. 45. Not CPI. Can't believe that crap. So if you're in the S&P, if you were somebody who, let's say, is retired and has, you know, $5 million in wealth and four of it's in the market, you're so far ahead of inflation, you know, you can't you'll never come back.
Right.
But if you're not, if you've been renting, God help you, and been living off your paycheck, how far behind are you? 30%?
Yeah, you're very far behind, and that's the problem, right? Because it's not the whole country that's invested in the market, although there's probably a large portion are that through 401k plans and 403b plans and all that stuff. But if you're not, you're certainly behind. And a lot of that is, listen, a lot of that's a direct result of also what the policy was, right? They just kept printing money, holding rates low, blah, 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 and they forced that trade.
Well, and they're doing the same thing now, I think.
Correct.
Well, but it's not admitted.
Which is why I don't think, first of all, I don't think we need to cut rates any more than they are. I think they're fine where they are because the economy seems to be humming along. Look at these earnings reports. They're great. The outlook is great. The guidance is great. Why are we stimulating, or why do we want to stimulate the economy anymore? There's no need, right? So why are you cutting rates again? There's no reason to cut rates in my mind. They should leave it where it is and let it catch up with itself.
Are you happy with Walmart possibly getting $10.2 billion back on tariffs and not passing any of it through?
I didn't see that headline. What are they going to do?
As of either last Monday or next Monday, firms can go online and apply for the tariffs coming back at them.
Right. And what's Walmart going
to
do?
Well, this is according to Citigroup.
Yeah.
Walmart, they think, is owed $10.2 billion is what they're going to apply for. Target, $2.2. Home Depot, $540 million.
Right.
Kohl's, $550 million. Gap, $400 million. Nike, a billion.
And they apply. What are they applying to the government? The government owes.
Yeah, there's some. Let's see how you do it. U.S. Customs and Border Protection is set to roll out a tariff claims filing portal known as the Consolidated Administration and Processing of Entries, or CAPE, on next Monday.
Yeah.
Importers can submit a dedication of the system for the tariffs they paid under Trump's now invalidated emergency tariff authority, and expect to receive one consolidated retail amount. So they're going to get a check.
They're going to get a $10.2 billion check.
I imagine it'd be a wire transfer, but it'd be nice to take a look at the check. Can you fit that many zeros on it? They better have a.
I'm not sure you can fit that many zeros on a check anymore, can you?
Well, you better have a commercial check. But a personal check, you probably can't. You could probably have one. I bet you got checks big enough.
Oh, yeah, right.
I mean, you couldn't write fiction like this. Walmart doesn't have to send any of it to anybody?
Apparently not. They're going to put it through this portal. We'll see where it happens, though. But didn't they even say after the Supreme Court knocked it down, but didn't they say there's other ways for them to keep that money?
The Supreme Court didn't say a word.
Yeah.
But other people thought maybe it would just be a rebate to all consumers of $1,000 or something.
Right, right.
Well, evidently, we're not going down that road. We're going to give it to the people who support the people. Why right. give it to us?
We're going to give it to the companies.
Yeah, why would you give it? Why would you give it to you and me? We might vote against the guy.
Well, we'll see. Is this unveils? When's it supposed to do it? Next week?
Next Monday. I don't know. I don't know how soon you get the check, or whether they some yeah. kind of a review or audit process or something. I imagine it's a huge application.
I would imagine it has to be, and I would also imagine it's an audit process, and they'll drag it out. It's not something that's just going to happen, and oh, we'll submit it and hit the send button, and then tomorrow we're going to get a check in the bank account. I don't think that's the way it's going to work.
It is if you contribute enough.
Yeah, I guess.
God, how warped are we all getting? It's pretty, you know, it's so scary that I mean, you see this stuff happen, and you go, but it is. Absolutely. I mean, where you are on this curve, and I just wonder: is the you know, Carl was doing like he does? You look at the inflation numbers. You look at the amount the government is going broke. Where, and yet, you know, I always push back at him. It's the reason why nobody listens to us is it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knows that, you know, at $1 million every 21 seconds, which is what we're up to.
Yeah.
What do you if you had a guess, Kenny? If something bad were to happen. What do you think it's going to be? I have my own opinion, but I don't know. You know, it's just one pulled out of somebody's behind. But I have my own opinion. What do you think would happen that would actually cause something to go off rails that it clearly sort of is off rails?
I'd have to think about that for a little bit. I mean, give me an idea. What do you think?
I think what's happening in the Iran situation, which is really screwed up.
Yeah.
Is we're not only harming ourselves, and I think we can probably absorb some of it, especially the oil piece.
Yeah.
I think the people who rely on to fund this place, because, 45% of the money comes from overseas, it funds our government now. I think we're hurting the people that we're counting on to fund us. Japan, China, Britain are our three biggest funders. And every one of them is having real problems, especially Japan, with these oil prices and all the other stuff.
Yeah, no, they're certainly having trouble. Listen, a lot of people are going to have trouble with these oil prices. I'd like to see if and we saw it last week when they thought there was a deal, how oil prices plunged by 10%. I suspect that we're going to see oil go back down into the mid-70s, and that should calm things down for sure. And then if it really settles down, it might even go back into the mid-60s where it was prior to, you know, kind of all this anxiety that they provoked. But I don't see how oil can stay up here or why it would stay up here this long unless this situation doesn't resolve itself.
Well, how much damage do you think, and I have no way of knowing, with Iran lashing out at some of these other people? You know, by the way, I understand why they did it. I mean, Saudi's letting, Saudi's letting us take off from their place and essentially bomb the hell out of. I think we're using Saudi bases. I'm not positive, but if we are, how is Saudi not? How are they not Iran's enemy?
I understand how Iran lashed out at the neighboring countries. I don't necessarily think it was the smartest thing to do, but I think Iran's been bullying everybody in the region there for a long time, as well as, you know, us and threatening other places around the world. And so I think the Gulf states are just tired of it. Which is why they let us do it, right? Use our airspace, use our bases, because they're tired of being bullied by Iran, or feeling like, you know, Iran's got this upper hand or this nuclear bomb and potentially gonna blow the whole place up. So I'm not sure that the other Gulf states didn't want us to do it. They clearly did because they allowed us to. And I think that speaks volumes about how they feel about the role Iran was playing in the world.
Well,
they do.
I don't disagree with that, except we. The part that I don't get is this total lack information. It appears to me people don't think ahead, because you have to try and think ahead. I mean, it wasn't 6 months ago we couldn't wait to drop these bunker buster bombs, right, to try them out or something.
Yeah.
So the story was we put them back 10 years.
Yeah.
Here we are 6 months later doing this all over again. Now, God help anybody who believed us the first time.
Well, we might have taken out with those bunker bus bombs. We might have set them back in their nuclear ambitions, but they were still threatening, right, with drones and with missiles and with, you saw what they did. They said they didn't have a missile that could reach Europe. Meanwhile, they launched a missile that reached Diego Garcia, which means they could have reached any capital in Europe. So they're full of shit.
Well, I'm not a fan of the Iranian group, but somehow, you know, you're an Italian guy. You know how to put your mind in Don Corleone. You got to put your mind. I mean, Iran, there's supposed to be, last time I checked, four countries that decided nobody else should have nuclear weapons, right? Was it us, Russia, Britain, and who was the other one? France, or early on?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I mean, Iran, name me any country around Iran that doesn't have a nuclear weapon.
Any country around Iran?
Oh, Israel's got them. Well, Pakistan's got them. Russia's got them.
Does Pakistan have an actual weapon?
I think they have a bomb. Whether they have a plane or a missile to get it anywhere, maybe. But
yeah,
definitely a nuclear. I mean, I'm sure they're capable of a dirty bomb.
I think a lot of people are capable of dirty bombs. I agree. I think that's difficult to monitor. I don't think you can guarantee that other countries don't have a dirty bomb.
I mean, I'm a zero fan of those guys, but I also think that everybody you don't like somewhere along. I mean, we didn't like Russia for how long, and yet we never we dealt with it.
Correct. But you know, you could on a certain level, while you didn't like them, you could deal with them. I don't think you could ever really deal with Iranians, right? I just don't think you could. I don't think you could ever believe them, ever trust them. Not that you trust Russia, but there was a sense of okay. You know, let's not be idiots and let's work together. I never got that sense that Iran ever was like that or was willing to be like that. I just think they were like a bully and we're going to blow you up and death to America and death to the Israel and all that stuff.
Well, they definitely have a different the idea of using religion as a reason to mess with people. Is diametrically opposed to the way we think, or at least what our Constitution says, anyway.
Correct.
I'm not so sure we don't have people who think like that, but...
No, I'm sure there are people that think like that. And have you been to New York recently?
Well, I think the people who recognize other people here thinking like that is because maybe they think like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, well, whatever. But the idea I actually thought, Kenny, and again, I'm not in the sphere of influence. I actually thought with what we had done, both this administration and last, we pretty much took out the Houthi guys.
Yeah.
Israel pretty much took care of the people in Syria. They had a new government there.
Yeah.
Lebanon seemed to have been quite... I actually thought that Iran had been in their weakest situation in a long time. The people internally were revolting. I actually thought that we almost could have let that one play out and maybe... It would have resolved itself over the next 5 to 7 to 10 years. I don't know that we really had to get our. I think we did bomb the hell out of their stuff 6 months ago. I actually thought they were like at their weakest ebb in a while, and we maybe could have let it play out. I don't know. We had to do something.
Well, I think they ultimately. I do think they were looking for regime change, right? I think they were looking to shake it up, and I think they're still looking for regime change ultimately. Right?
Well, but they you know, maybe they're looking for regime change here too.
We get regime change every 4 years in this country.
Well,
we're
going to try, but I mean, I guess we wanted a regime change in Germany too. That never happened.
Yeah.
You know, I thought those guys were kind of on a weak moment. Plus, there's a lot of weird stuff, Kenny. The assassinating people up top and then looking for somebody to negotiate with. Plus, a couple weeks ago, I don't know, I get some of the weirdest stuff the listeners send me. There's one guy who evidently over in Iran who was a pretty serious moderate.
Yeah.
And he was the guy that negotiated the stuff with Biden and what was the guy?
Yeah.
Obama? Who was the guy who ran for president and then he was the negotiator? What was his name? Kerry.
Oh, Kerry. Yeah, John Kerry. Yeah.
But this guy was the architect of that from the Iranian side.
Yeah,
and was considered like one of the moderates over there, if there was one. But he had so much worldwide respect that the lunatics couldn't really mess with him.
Uh huh.
We killed him.
Well, did we kill him because we were targeting, or did we kill him because
he was targeted? He was targeted, evidently, by the Israelis or somebody.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the Israelis really want peace or not? I don't know. I can't figure that one out.
Yeah.
I mean,
I got to jump.
All right, buddy.
I'll talk to you next week.
So, do you follow or do you come after Trump when you talk to Maria?
I come after.
I'm sitting there going, Kenny Pulcheri on Maria Bartiromo, and then I go, President Trump on Maria Bartiromo. I go, what's the difference, Kenny Trump?
Goodbye.
See ya. SP Futures up 28, NASDAQ Futures up 127. Do we have Professor Hill?
Hey, what's up, Tom?
How are you, bud?
Doing well. NS Nestor's wrapping up. And just, I get about 1,000 emails a day from students. So I get buried in emails. So if you sent me an email about Friday and I didn't respond, it's just, it's the end of the semester and I'm just getting bombarded.
How was the semester over in April? You guys are a semester in there?
Well, it's coming up. You know, I my classes are asynchronous and half my students haven't submitted.
What does that mean, asynchronous?
That means they're completely online. Our economics degree, we have an economics degree that is completely online. You can get it. You can take it from anywhere in the United States or anywhere in the world and get your economics degree from us. It's completely online. But we also have in-person.
Do you have any Austrian people studying Austrian economics?
No, I'm probably the only marginal one that is in the program. But I think my econ classes are pretty, you know, they're pretty kind of mainstream. I present both sides, and well, I present multiple sides. So,
well, since
it's not an Austrian. I don't teach it as an Austrian.
Okay, I understand.
What I do is I teach the neoclassical modeling, the demand, downward sloping demand, upward sloping supply. But I teach it from kind of a perspective that is, I guess, friendly to the Austrians, because I look at demanders of a product or suppliers of labor or suppliers of products as individuals, and we populate like for example labor demand curve, right, or labor supply curve, where people are ordered from their the reservation wage, so the lowest reservation wage up to the highest reservation wage. And so it's kind of from an Austrian perspective.
Are you
interpreting the neoclassical models?
Have you ever been to Vienna?
No, most Austrians probably haven't.
God,
well, you know, you could think of it as, you know, the Keynesians are called saltwater economists, and the monetarist neoclassicals are called freshwater economists, because they are geographically located.
Well, you deserve a trip to Vienna. It's pretty.
That has nothing to do with the nation of Austria. It's just that founding members of this way of thinking, this perspective, happened to be from that part of the world, and they formed the school, I think, because of the atrocities of the Nazi regime. They ended up fleeing that part of Europe and come to the United States.
Well, Vienna is pretty neat.
Yeah. Well, I've been watching this series. Now it's on Netflix. It was on Amazon Prime, called The Man in the High Castle, and it's so freaking good. It's sci-fi, but you wouldn't think it when you start watching it, because what happens is the Germans and the Japanese win World War II, and they split up the United States, South America. The Germans take all of Africa, and it's really fascinating. So if people really want to know...
Well, that would be their demise.
Yeah. If people really want to know what a tyranny looks like, watch it, because if we did not win World War II, the Nazis would have taken, you know, probably the... almost all of the United States. They would have had all of Europe, and you don't even want to imagine that world. I mean,
well, I don't
what
know how
we
they
think
would
of tyranny
gotten over here,
is not even close to that level of tyranny.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but I don't know how they actually would have gotten over here. But maybe.
Well, I'm just saying it's just an alternative history. It's really instructive on what real tyranny looks like. In the United States, you can protest the president, whether you're Democrat or Republican, whether the president is of your party or not. You can protest them, and you can call them all kinds of names, and you're not going to be tortured. You're not going to have your cojones cracked by a nutcracker. That's not going to happen in the United States. That you might lose a job because of your speech, but you're not going to be having your cojones cracked. They actually
at least
do that
yet, at least not yet.
They actually do that in a series.
You know, that was probably the best Star Trek episode, you know. Are you a Star Trek fan?
It is sci-fi, because there are people in the series called Travelers who bring films in from alternate versions from the multiverse, showing that the Americans actually won the war. But it's so fascinating, because one of the leaders, one of the heads of the American Reich, played the king in a movie about magic with the guy from Fight Club, Ed something.
I think we would have had some sympathizers here.
Well, he ends up being part of the Reich.
That's right? What I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and they explore this idea that the Nazis were purifying the population. If somebody had a disease that was not curable, it was the duty of that person and the family to allow the state to kill that person. And there's a scene where he's being rewarded at this magnificent, you know, I'm not saying it's awesome because I like Nazis, I'm saying it's just magnificent in the sense that the set that they created with computers, the Berlin Capitol with this huge, massive Capitol building with 100,000 people inside of it, saluting this guy from New York.
Wait a minute, did it have a ballroom?
Well, no. This thing is massive. It's 100,000 people.
Did they tear down part of it and put a ballroom up like we're doing at the White House?
Yeah. Well, they're saluting this guy, and his son, watching this on TV in New York, calls the local health department and says he has an incurable disease. And then the Nazis celebrate him as a hero to the Reich.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's real. And the mom and dad are just devastated. The dad is devastated, but he can't be devastated because then he would be suspect, right?
Well, there's one of the Star Trek episodes, it's probably the best one ever, was The City at the Edge of Forever or something?
Yeah, I remember. That was the original Star Trek, right?
Yeah, it was with when Bones jumped into the time machine.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the Enterprise was gone.
Yeah.
Because Germany had won the war. So they had to go back and fix what Bones messed up.
Yeah, yeah. Because he saved the life of somebody.
Well, no, he let Joan Collins die.
Yeah.
She was supposed to die.
Yeah, I remember that episode, but it's been a while since I watched it.
Oh, Joan Collins was so hot. How do you forget?
I used to watch Star Trek a lot in the Navy when I was in Orlando, Florida, going to nuclear power school. We were there for about a year and a half, and when there was nothing to do, I'd watch episodes of Star Trek, and that's the last time I watched an episode of Star Trek.
All right, they're still lining up. Hey, yeah. I gotta, but just, you know, just if you're not a big fan of the Nazis, it still doesn't mean you don't think that some of their uniforms and staff cars were pretty cool.
They had the world's best uniforms. I heard they had fashion designers designing their uniforms, which makes sense because, you know, as far as uniform goes, I mean, I can see it being a huge influence on the youth. What young kid would want to? I mean, I love being in a Boy Scout uniform. I like being in the Boy Scout uniform with the shirt, the uniform pants, wearing the neckerchief with the neckerchief, like, you know, scouting thing, that the tie, right?
Well, you know, some girls like guys in uniforms too, you know.
Well, I loved marching around as a unit in the Boy Scouts with the flag.
Oh, God.
I
mean,
camping. And our scout troop had matching tents, green and yellow matching tents, so we were uniform. We were like, I think our scout masters were like veterans or something.
Did you make it to Eagle Scout?
I didn't make it to Eagle Scout because my parents got divorced. I was on track. I was a Life Scout by like age 13.
One of the contributors to the show,
and I stopped doing it.
One of the contributors to the show, his son made it all Eagle Scout, and that was looked at when he was applying to college. It was looked at pretty high.
Yeah, I don't think it would be now.
Well, this wasn't that long ago, maybe 10 years. Anyway, what do you think of? I think you're probably a Walmart shopper. How much are you going to get back from Walmart when they get their $10.2 billion back in tariff?
Well, I think Walmart's going to get that money back, but I don't think it's like evil that they keep it. I mean, I think what'll end up happening is they'll be able to keep the prices lower.
You think so?
Because they have competition. So yeah, and they have competition. I mean, Amazon and Walmart are locked into hefty competition, and you know, you got Target as well. So it's not like they're going to just start raising prices or anything like that.
Do you agree with your namesake, even though you deny it, Milton Friedman? It's one of the hardest things to teach about the politics. I did what the hell was that? I took the theory of price from him.
Yeah,
he said in the short run, the most hardest thing for guys learning economics to understand is that in the short term, somebody's cost has nothing to do with how much they can charge.
Yeah. I agree with that 100%. I don't think costs matter. I mean, they matter in the sense that if the price is too low and they don't cover your cost, eventually you're going to drop out of business. But that, I think that right there, if that's happening to you, you either have to have to make a decision, and that decision is, do I stay in this market? Do I do nothing and just kind of hope for the best? Or do I actually exit? And so, and the another part of that is, if I stay in it, I got to find a way to cut my cost. So in competition, the firm that can do the best cost cutting, which is Walmart, which has been Walmart, the firm that can do the best, and McDonald's, the firm that can do the best cost cutting is going to be the one that survives. And that involves innovation. Who can be the most innovative? And well, that also brings
only so
in
much you can innovate.
AI plays a big role in that.
It's only
too.
So much you can innovate the Walmart. You got to get it on the shelves. You got to do stuff. But
yeah, but I think what they're best at is their supply chains and their logistics and getting and distribution. Right. That's what they really do well.
Yeah, they have.
And that's what McDonald's
time.
Does well too. McDonald's is very good at that.
Well, they've done that well for a long time. There was a. Where the hell was I going with this? It'll be an interesting, one thing, it's nice to have people on the show.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that supply curves aren't upward sloping. And I had this conversation with lots of people. And the reason why I say that is because when you're talking about an intangible good, like a movie download, a download of a software title onto your computer, marginal cost on that is zero. So the supply curve is going to be flat, perfectly elastic. And what firms do in that situation is they probably run these models, these log quantity price models, where they're trying to estimate the elasticity. And if they can get the elasticity by setting the price at various levels, if they can get the elasticity at -1, what they're doing is they're extracting the maximum amount from a market. And so once they've determined the price that does that, that's the supply curve. So for intangible goods, the supply curve is perfectly elastic,
well, but there's,
flat.
There's not.
But it's perfectly inelastic for things that are physical. Because what happens is, right now, I'm going to estimate that I think I can sell 1 million units of glasses, reading glasses. So I'm going to supply 1 million. I'm going to build 1 million of them. Then a month later, they get to the stores. At the moment they get to the store, that supply curve is perfectly inelastic. It's up and down, straight up and down. And so that's what supply is. For intangible goods, it's perfectly flat.
Why can't you order some more?
Physical goods, it's perfectly inelastic. It's straight up and down.
Yeah, but why can't you order some more?
Well, but at the moment you make the decision to make X million are going to be supplied.
Yeah, I don't, boy. It depends on your time frame.
And if prices are generally going up, that means more suppliers and current suppliers are going to supply even more. And that's why you get an upward sloping supply curve.
Well,
an upward sloping supply curve in the short run ignores this thing.
Well, in the short run, in the short run, the supply curve of oil is inelastic. But in the long run, it's very elastic.
Well, what I'm saying is, as the price goes up, the current firms are probably going to say, hey, I need to supply more. And new firms will jump in and supply more. So there's a correlation between price and quantity supplied.
Well, in this area, even going back to grad school, a lot of the examples they would use would always be, since Illinois is an agricultural state, you use those kinds of things. Now, this year is an interesting, we get this, from our clients. We have a lot of clients who are in a lot of different stuff, and some guys are farmers. And there's a big difference right now. Now, let's say we're talking about, you probably have already made the decision, but up until a few weeks ago, you probably could have switched. The big thing in Illinois is, corn or soybeans.
Yeah.
So a couple of our clients anticipate, or not, but just generally order their fertilizer and their seed well in advance. So their prices are essentially fine, and they're, planning on having a good year. Now, all of a sudden, if corn prices were to, all of a sudden there's a shortage of corn, and you were planning on soybeans this year, which you don't need a whole lot of fertilizer for. That's why you rotate crops, because soybeans add to the soil, corn takes from the soil.
Like alfalfa, yeah.
It's all gets involved. But all of a sudden, if corn prices were to shot up, and you say, okay, well, you should be able to get more corn. Well, now all of a sudden, somebody was planning on planting soybeans. Okay, he now has to pay the new price for the corn, And, oh, by the way, he's got to go out and buy a way more fertilizer because he may have had corn on the crop last year, which means he needs even more this year. And, oh, by the way, fertilizer prices have shot up. So he not only didn't get his in advance, he not only has to buy more at a newer price. So you can see why if you're forcing this guy by the price, if all of a sudden corn's $40 a bushel, for him to meet the corn demand at the end of the summer, not now, it's going to cost him one hell of a lot more than the guy who routinely bought his stuff a year ago because we're in an inflationary spike. So, I mean, yeah, there absolutely is a reason for...
Well, there's also... These farmers are also engaged in speculation. They're locking in prices, too. My grandpa, he'd always talk about how he thinks it's going to be a great year for potatoes, so he would lock in the price before he planted his potatoes.
Right.
Or if he felt like the price was going to go up, he wouldn't lock in the price in spring. He'd wait until August to sell them. And my dad was not very good at that. My dad, you know, for some reason, he wasn't very good at anticipating the market. And some people are very good at it, and some people aren't. My dad was a very good potato farmer. He could grow an awesome potato plant. He could grow an awesome sugar beet plant. He could grow awesome alfalfa. And he was almost a perfectionist in the way he watered it. But the problem was he had a hard time with speculation. And some people who are not very good farmers are great at speculating. They know when prices are going to be high at the end of at the harvest relative to the planting.
The whole purpose.
My father wasn't very good at that, and that's why he went bankrupt a couple of times, and why my parents ended up divorced, I think.
Well, the whole purpose of your, I'll say, the Chicago Board of Trade, is to remove the speculation piece from both the farmer and the person who makes the cornflakes.
Yeah.
So if your father planted corn and it cost him a buck and a half a bushel and it's trading $2.50, I'll take my buck. Maybe he'll sell half of it to futures or whatever. He's not going to sell all of it because all of a sudden he gets a hailstorm over his place.
Yeah.
And he can't deliver. He's got a problem. But if he does that, now granted, some guys say, well, gee, I think corn's going from $2.50 to $4, so I'm not gonna sell any of it forward. And all of a sudden, it drops to a buck and a quarter, which it probably wouldn't. Well, then he's gonna lose dough. I mean, you can figure out how much speculation you want in there, right?
Well, I think this has been going on for a while in the United States.
Well, it's been going on since.
And I think this is why something like the Almanac gets published because
it's been going on since the Board of Trade opened.
Yeah.
By the way, you know what? Who do you guys went out of business in 2008? The firm, what's on the tip of my tongue? They went under, and then Bear Stearns went under. And so who were the other guys that went under?
As like a trader?
Trading firm.
The one with the M?
Yeah, but you know what they're, how they got their teeth in the game? They went through
Merrill Lynch?
No, it was, oh God, I'll think of it. I'll look it up on break. But those guys, it was a New York name. You would never have guessed. They went through the South and sold people futures contracts on cotton.
Oh, really? Wow.
Long before there was a Board of Trade or a New York Merck.
Yeah.
They did it all over the counter.
One way to do it, though, is if you think the price is going to fall by harvest, you can lock in your sale price when you plant.
Right.
That's one way to do it.
You can do that a lot of times it's from the co-op. You can do it a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
And recipe futures up 25, NASDAQ futures up 107. We'll get back. Maybe we'll let Carl pine a little if he wants, and then maybe you can cover him on Friday if you can.
Yeah, I can come in on Friday.
We'll be right back. Stocks today.
From the
How
start
would you like
on?
To save
no,
money
no,
on
same
nearly
time
all
as today.
Your prescription
drug? Okay, all right.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Sharks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, and welcome back, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Ricky on the board. I'm sitting here looking at tariff refunds, but we'll get rid of that. S&P futures up 24, NASDAQ futures up 107. We were down a little bit yesterday, first time in like 12 or 13 days. So today we had decent earnings out of United Health. You know, all these medical costs keep going up. Yeah, the place to do that, okay. They're up $24. That's almost 8%, so that's a lot. So Dow futures are up 254, of which is United Health up 24. So multiply that by like 7. So 175, 160 of the Dow move is in Lehman Brothers. You also have Amazon up 644, Goldman Sachs up 535. So that's really those are the three stocks that are moving the Dow. Over in Europe, the DAX up 69.3%, the FTSE down 22.2%, the CAC round down 27.3%. So let's say mixed to not much over there. Everybody's kind of looking at this U.S.-Iran ceasefire deadline. Nikkei up 524.9%, Hang Seng up 126.5%, Shanghai up 2, call that flat. So bullish over there as well. Bonds up 3 basis points, 4.28. The Bund unchanged, 2.98, almost making it to 3% here. Oil actually down 31 cents, 89.30. So kind of way down from the 115 spike. Brent is 87.50, up 8 cents, so very quiet on the oil market. RBOB up a penny at 313. Gold down $26, 48.02. Gold's been very volatile in this, as you might expect, because the dollar's been running up and down. So we're down $1.17 to $78.84. Foreign exchange, dollar is a little higher, but still the euro is at 117.59. It was down to 115 something. British pound 135.1. So again, they're kind of steady in here. Crypto up 126, 76,418. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:33 here in Chicago. 50 degrees right now with a high of 72. Times of clouds and sun, breezy and warmer with a thunderstorm in the area late this afternoon. Gusty winds and small hail can accompany any downpour. Tonight will be partly cloudy with foggy. Will be foggy late, and an evening shower cannot be ruled out. The low tonight will be 52 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 69 degrees right now with a high of 96. Partly sunny and very warm. Strong winds and low humidity will lead to a high fire threat. Tonight will be clear to partly cloudy. Good conditions for viewing the meteor shower. Now sports real quick. We got MLB. Cubs beat Phillies 5-1 yesterday. And today we got Phillies at Cubs 6:40 p.m. and White Sox at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. For NBA, we got game 2 of first round of playoffs. Yesterday, we got Cavaliers beating Raptors 115-105. Hawks beat Knicks 107-106. And Timberwolves beat Nuggets 119-114. Today, we got 76ers at Celtics 6 p.m. Trailblazers at Spurs at 7 p.m. And Rockets at Lakers at 9:30 p.m. If you're looking for a reason to raise a glass and give back, join Friends of Fisher House and Revolution Brewing for the Heroes for Heroes kickoff party happening Friday, May 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at their Ketsey Brewery. String through for food, raffles, good company, and a chance to learn about Fisher House and how they support our military. For the month of May, a portion of Revolution sales will be donated to Friends of Fisher House, providing a home away from home for veterans and military families. This event is free and open to anyone who will support. That's the Heroes for Heroes kickoff party on Friday, May 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at 3340 North Kedzie. Back over to you, Chief.
Nice job on that one, Ricky.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, Ricky does a great job.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
I appreciate that, guys.
Ricky, is that Meyer boy bothering you?
don't say too much to him like that.
That's from Better Off Dead.
We don't want to ruin him and give him a big head or anything.
That's John Cusack. From the John Cusack movie, Better Off Dead. It's Chicago, so you guys should know about that movie.
The their beer is anti-hero, right? IPA.
What's that?
The beer is anti-hero, right? IPA. Oh.
Yeah, yeah, anything revolution, you know. I think, yeah, they do the anti-hero, but they do other stuff too.
The just as a little bit of history here on how this stuff gets started, the Lehman Brothers, you would have guessed.
Oh, Lehman Brothers,
would,
yeah.
Yeah, it would be like a New York firm, but the they actually started in, where the hell they start? The guy's from Bavaria. He's changed his name to Henry. His name was, God, the hell, what the hell was his name? Chaim Lehman, son of a Jewish cattle merchant, immigrated to the United States from Rimpar, Bavaria.
What year?
1844.
Yeah.
He opened a dry goods store.
That's about the time when the Prussian king was forcing Jewish people to convert to Lutheranism.
Okay. Well, he opened up a dry goods store in Montgomery, Alabama, and he followed the way his brother Emanuel Lehman came here, and then get a little. The first name was H. Lehman and Bro.
Bro, nice.
And then they changed it to Lehman Brothers.
So I wish they would have left it at Bro.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Stock just for the name.
He could have gone on the south side with that, you know. Cotton was one of the most important crops in the U.S. in the mid-19th century. It was Alabama's highest grossing cash crop. Before the American Civil War, nearly all U.S. cotton was produced by forced slave labor. Yeah. In 1860, U.S. census, slaves made up 45% of Alabama's population. I did not know that, did you?
Yeah.
And then he had this guy had 7 enslaved people. Wow, three males and 4 females, ranging in age from 5 to 50. Wow. Anyway, capitalized on cotton's high market value, the brothers began to accept raw cotton from forced labor plantations as payment for merchandise. They eventually became a second business, trading in cotton.
It was like a barter system.
Well, one brother died of yellow fever, and they would trade essentially futures on cotton. Yeah. And in 1858, the center of cotton trading shifted from Alabama to New York City, where cotton factories and commission houses were based.
So well, that's where all the cotton was being turned into fabric, right?
Yeah, well, then he moved up from Alabama to 119 Liberty Street, which is right around the corner from Wall Street, for those who don't know.
Yeah.
And the 30-year-old Emanuel relocated there to run the office.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
That's what the almanac is for, right? To help people, you know, figure out. They make observations of what's going on in the environment, so they can, you know, speculate better.
But they,
I think
they,
that's exactly why the almanac was.
They were
created.
One of the founding fathers of the New York Cotton Exchange. I mean, everybody thinks they were just like a brokerage firm out of New York. They have quite a history to them. Those are the guys that went under in 2008.
Well, if you watch the TV show "Food That Built America," that series. There are some interesting histories there, man. Like the guys that created the Ivory soap, it was originally named White soap.
Yeah.
But because their business was so booming, it was like aspirin. They had a rebrand. Aspirin had a rebrand under the name Bayer, and White soap had a rebrand under the name Ivory, which is, you know, an off-white color. So just the fascinating history of American firms. The Hershey story is pretty fascinating. But yeah, it's a fascinating series. I thoroughly enjoyed that series.
Look at these guys,
television out there.
They founded the New York Cotton Exchange. They sat on the board of governors. They became a member of the Coffee Exchange in 1883. All those different exchanges for all this stuff. They became a... Because New York had 4 exchanges on the same floor, the same trading area. And there were yellow lines demarcating the different places. There was a New York Merck, the New York, it was the Coffee, Sugar, and Cocoa Exchange.
Oh, wow.
And then there was the New York Merck. The other was the New York Board of Trade, which I think had, I don't know what they had. I should be looking at all this stuff because I knew some of this history because I was on the floor there. But they, you know what their first IPO was? God, this is fascinating. Their first IPO in 1899, and they underwrote their first public offering. International Steam Pump Company.
Hmm.
And let's look at the places that they partnered with Goldman Sachs to bring General Cigar Company to market, followed closely by Sears Roebuck, Woolworth, May Department Stores, Gimbel Brothers, Macy's, Studebaker, Budrich, and Endicott. They would talk about old names. Wow, those guys brought all those people to market.
Yeah, wow.
And then they went broke in 2008. Poof.
Yeah. Well, they're allowed. They weren't... I think they were just a sacrificial anode, right? As we would say in the Navy, we put zinc inside.
Well, they in Bear Stearns, yeah.
Yeah, we put zinc. You put zinc inside a a steam condenser because you want it to corrode rather than the metal in the condenser. You know, these massive condensers that are the size of our master bedroom here in North Carolina, but you want that to corrode before the metal corrodes, right? So we always had to do PMs on that. So we always call that a sacrificial anode, and that's what they were, right? They were the sacrifice.
Well, you've done a lot of research on the banking stuff, and I talk about your stuff with all the other people that are on, and you've got, you know, we're pumping money into the system, and the fact that you've identified that only certain people can get at it, I think is
absolutely fascinating. The biggest one is that non-depository financial institution lending. I mean, that is really, I'm gonna check it out next month and see if that's increased even more. But if you look at all other loans, they're either not growing very fast or they're actually in decline or not growing at all. But this one area, it's up 40% in a year, just over a year.
Well, how does your research, and I'm going to talk to, the reason why I'm asking this is tomorrow, hopefully Larissa will be on. I mean, if she's not, Russell's obviously really good. But she's been really all over this idea of the, what's the part of the economy everybody thinks is falling apart now, the people are doing the low interest loans. What do they call that? You know what I'm talking about. Since banks don't do the loans you're talking about, the people that are having serious trouble.
Payday lenders, or
there's a name for it. I'll think of it. But she's really worried about that. Where these the subprime lenders, basically.
Okay.
And how does that dovetail? Because that was Jamie Dimon's biggest complaint a month ago when he talked about they had to put reserve for losses and then these other under other lenders. And you know, the people that are doing the, if you want to buy this shirt, we'll loan you the money, that kind of thing, and they're all over the place.
On Amazon now, you can spread out your payment over four
But she's very concerned about that. But what you're talking about, it appears that...
It's kind of like layaway, except you get the product now and you pay for it.
Well,
in layaway, you had to pay for it, and then once it was paid off, then you got to take it home. But now, it's kind of like the reverse. Well, I noticed that's happening a lot on Amazon.
But it appears that the banks won't make loans to, you know, the plumbing company.
Yeah.
In Illinois, there's enough banks.
If it's a small plumbing company, they're probably using a credit card at 20%.
Well, I guess what's happening is the banks are, people are funding these guys that are doing this lending, and the banks are lending them money. So the banks are one step away, but they still have some concern if these places go under.
Yeah,
and she's wondering if the stuff that she's seeing, she thinks that's the biggest domestic problem
with
the market.
That's the issue, though. Why that is happening is because they got rid of reserve requirements and they instituted these capital requirements and liquidity requirements, and all that sets up this perverse system where the banks only want to make loans to the people that have who have spotless credit. And very little risk. You know you're going to get your money back if the money's being invested in the stock market because the Fed is creating inflation, which it's boosting, you know, the stock market more than it would otherwise. So that's where all the credit's going.
Well,
right. So,
but she's claiming
the
banks,
the rule changes have set up the system.
But she claims the banks are turning around and lending. In other words, they're not going to lend to the plumbing company. But if Hal and Chief and Ricky put together, we get a bunch of capital.
Yeah,
and we decide we're going to do this lending, to buildings.
Well, that's
so
what
forth.
Markets do, right?
Yeah, when the banks are now lending them money.
When there's a demand for something, you know, startup cash or operations cash for a small business, and big banks aren't making those loans, somebody's going to try to supply those loans because there's a demand for it. So that's just the market working, right? And I'm pretty sure the big banks that are lending this money, they don't care if it's going to the small bank, because if those loans go bad, they're going to be able to access like things like the discount window.
Well, that's right. They're supposed to still have capital requirements, but who the hell knows? But it's interesting how it works or does. My concern, Kenny asked me, I didn't have a chance to say, I really think the issue is the amount of money that the government's borrowing.
Yeah,
like in the '70s, you might have a day when your 30-year rate goes from where this morning it's 4.89. All of a sudden, an auction might turn out to be 5.5 or 6 on one day.
Yeah,
and everybody says that can't happen, but I've seen it happen.
Oh, it can happen. It can happen. Yeah,
because I don't know where we're going to get this money, to be honest with you.
People who say it can't don't know history, because it can happen.
Well, why?
And it's likely to happen. But, you know, I think what has happened is because of the way the Fed is now operating, where it pays interest for two banks if they keep this money. If they lend to the Fed instead of lending to plumbers, that money would come out of the banking system, and it would cause prices to rise, because there's this newly printed money being pushed out into the broader economy. But what happens is when the Fed pays interest on reserves, it keeps the money in the banking system. But as we've been saying for, you know, 10 years, that money's leaking out. Where is it leaking out? It's leaking out to these non-depository financial institutions. And that's why you see margin debt almost perfectly correlated with
Private equity is a term I was searching for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, well, I'm not in that industry, so I'm just looking at it from, you know, my 2008 cobalt. You know, I'm looking at it from my angle, and I see where that money's going. It's going to purchase. People are using it to purchase real estate, whether it's commercial or residential, and they're using it to buy stocks. They're using it to buy financial assets, NFL properties, NBA, you know, professional sports teams. That's where that money's going, and only a few select people have access to that credit.
Well, and one part of the K, you know, money for nothing and the chicks for free, as they used to say on MTV, right?
Yeah.
And on the other end of the K, people are cutting coupons. I mean, it's a...
Yeah.
But, you look at... What is the correlation?
Well, people are using this delayed payment system, which is a form of lending, where...
Yeah.
I buy something for $400 on Amazon. I got 6 months to pay it off, but I get it today.
What is your?
That's a form of credit.
Given what the Fed is doing right now, and you look at, you know, an M2, okay, which is what I've always looked at. Well, I used to look at M1, but there's no M1 anymore.
Well, M2 and M1 are almost the same now.
Well, so you look at M2, which is the money supply,
which was changed, by the way, when they changed all these banking rules. Oh. M1 was changed.
Yeah, because nobody cares. Nobody cares about a demand deposit and currency, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you look at M2 and you see that kind of rocketing up. Well, M2 is it, you and I can raise M2. I mean, if you dig $100,000 out of the backyard, which I think you probably have, and you drop it in the bank,
I have a hard enough time putting down fertilizer.
Well, there you go. And, you drop that in the bank, and I go
watering the grass.
$50,000 from that bank and put it in a checking account. Same bank. We just made $50,000, right? Because now the total money supply.
Well, my money's hidden between the car seats and in the couch cushions. That's where my money's hidden.
Well, you got to be careful you don't drive your car into the pond or something if you do that. but now I'm looking at the Federal Reserve balance sheet, which nobody used to look at. But now it's obviously part of what the Fed is doing. I mean, it always was. It just never really moved.
Well, it wasn't large like it is.
Well, so in the last, since the war started, I'm going to say in the last 9 weeks, the Fed balance sheet has grown by some pretty close to $100 billion, say 90.
Yeah.
Now, that's pure stuff that they went out and bought, right, that is on there. Now, it's not the same as M2, because M2 has multipliers, and M2 moves around. You know, the Fed could be – they could lower interest rates.
Well, if that money that they created to finance this war comes out in the form of a loan, then that adds to M2.
Right. But I'm saying that dramatic of a move in the Fed balance sheets, I mean, they've actually popped $90 billion on there, and that's going to have a huge multiplier effect, as I recall from school.
Yeah.
Now, that's massive interjection of funds over the last 8 weeks to fund this war, which is...
Well, the M2 multiplier historically was probably around 2 or 3, I think it was, maybe 1 to 3. But during the pandemic, it had gotten down to like 0.5.
Well, because there was so much of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But the concept that you've brought into the picture is you can't just look at that number. You can't say, okay, the multiplier is 2 or whatever, because what you've brought in, even without, I think you know you said it, is that for people in the market, that multiplier might be 4.
Yeah.
And for people... earning
for
a
us,
wage, the multiplier might be 0.
Yeah.
Except for stuff they buy.
Yeah.
It's not helping them at all.
Yeah. And, you know, it once that money gets out of the broader economy and it filters down to us, that is what pushes prices up. prices aren't a thing that evil corporations raising prices aren't isn't gouging. It's the fact there's all this money that touches the people that you mentioned first, and they get to buy stuff at uninflated prices. But after that money trades changes hands a couple of times in the exchanges, all of a sudden, now there's all this new money out there, and the firm's got to raise the prices as a result. So price increases are a symptom of the cancer, and the cancer is a central bank printing money.
Right. And but when you say
you can't cure the disease by treating symptoms.
No.
You can only treat the disease by treating the disease.
If the central bank didn't do anything, they didn't raise any of the money supply whatsoever, and you had an oil price spike, your gasoline prices would go up, but you'd have less to spend on something else, right?
And that's what's going on right now.
And all the prices of all the other stuff goes down. But if you put money into the system, you can sort of, gas prices go up more than they should, and the other stuff, instead of coming down, might go up as well, just not the same amount, right?
Yeah, exactly. You kind of see that right now. If you look at electric vehicles, Europe, I think they're seeing a 40 to 50% increase in electric vehicles. In the United States, both used and new electric vehicles are rising about 20 to 30%.
That can't be.
Month over month?
That can't be.
What do you mean?
Your CPI, your government said that last year, used car trucks were down 3%.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at month over month from...
No. The problem with guys like you is you're rogues. They're telling you now to not look at...
Yeah.
I, for one, am a rogue. I know that.
Well, I tend not to look at aggregated
Chief,
data.
Look, part of what you just saw in the last couple of days, and part of this rah-rah reaction is clearly from this tariff decision, okay, and the expectation that these refunds are going out to
Wouldn't it have been better for those refunds to go to the American public?
Okay.
I mean, if we're going to refund, why not just...
I get that, but here's the problem. Yeah. The American consumer doesn't have standing. The companies have standing, okay? Yeah. You can say, well, economically...
Standing or a voice.
Well,
here's an interesting thing.
Chief, listen, you can make all the economic arguments you want. At the end of the day, the reality of it is this. Many of the things that are going on right now. I mean, do you really think that Walmart's stock price isn't going to react to the idea that $15 billion is going to get dumped into their cash account? Which of course, duh. What is a stock price? It's a multiple on free cash flow and operating results, right? I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Don't make it worse than it is. 10.2, not 15.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Point being, the toilet's
what's $5 billion?
What's five billion among friends?
Well, no, the point, Chief, though, and Hal, is that this money was forcibly extracted from your wallet.
Yeah.
At gunpoint, literally at gunpoint.
Yeah.
Okay. And then instead of that money inuring to Walmart's benefit as a consequence of voluntary exchange in the marketplace, you went into the store, you bought something voluntarily, whatever. No. It was forcibly extracted from you at gunpoint by this tariff system. Now, you could argue whether or not the tariffs were a good idea or not. However, once they're ruled illegal, then the only parties withstanding are the places that actually paid them initially.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the reality is that a lot of what you're seeing right now is the anticipatory result of that being reflected in market prices for stocks. Now, the problem with this is, as I pointed out with this piece that I did on Musk's hucksterism a couple of days ago, where he says everybody's going to live in a penthouse because of AIs and robotics, productivity increases and this and that. And by the way, we're going to have a high income dividend check that everyone's going to get every year. You're not going to have to work. They're just going to pay you. The problem with this, and Chief, you actually fell for this to a large extent when I first brought it up on the show, and it that you fell for it immediately in your first, you know, your first blush reaction.
What did I fall for?
You fell for the idea that this could actually work. Okay, because his argument was the productivity increase is greater than the amount of the checks. Okay, and you said, well, yeah, that's true.
What I said was, according to labor theory, which I took zillions of years ago, nobody pays any attention to, even me, if things get so much more efficient, the person doing the work should get part of that.
Okay,
but they don't.
But, well, okay. First off, they don't.
Yeah.
Secondly, there's a problem with this. This theory was run all through the 1980s and the 1990s. I know a little bit about it because I was one of the guys that was making it happen in the computer world.
That's when the theory fell apart.
Well, here's the reality. Productivity improvement on a compound annual basis from roughly the 1950s to the mid-1970s ran about 3%. Okay? Then PCs and the internet show up over the next 20 years, right? Which, you know, was how I made my money. That was what I did as a business. Okay, the prediction was this was going to spike productivity upward dramatically, and therefore everyone's standard of living was going to tremendously profit. Sounds like a good theory, right? I mean, it makes there's logic to this in that the word processor is more efficient than a typewriter, right? I mean, we think. Except what actually happened was that over the last years, productivity improvement, it's still positive, but it actually went down. Now, why? And the answer is the cost of the technology accelerated faster than the improvement in output. And, oh, by the way, what do we have going on right now?
Oh, we got it going on again.
Well, no, we're not building terawatts of AI crap that has never made a single person a single dollar of profit on an operating basis anywhere. And yet, it's all going to come. It's on the come. It's going to come. It's going to be this. And then the second problem is...
Sort of like click-throughs.
Well, first off, this isn't going to work. You're not going to get the results. But let's assume you did. Let's just, for the sake of argument, let's just give you that one, even though I think, historically speaking, it's BS and it's never worked. But let's assume I'm wrong. Because, you know, hey, you can be wrong. Okay, fine. I get the productivity improvement this year. Let's say that 30% of all the white-collar workers get replaced by an AI computer. And by God, the productivity goes from 1.7, which is roughly where it's running right now, to 4. All right? I mean, that's a big number. All right? It only happens once.
Well,
You fired the 30% of the workers. You got the improvement one time. Okay? It only happens once for each person you fire. And then the bigger problem is that check has to be cut every single year. Forever.
Why don't... here's the thought. We're running out of time. Here's the thought for the Bodias, as they say on the South Side. Why don't we schedule a time, either on a Tuesday or whatever. Tuesday's probably the best because you're already here, Carl. Let's take a half hour and talk about how people determine productivity and how it... I think it's kind of messed up in how they do it, how they traditionally have done it. I mean,
well, the computations today is nonsense, and it's been bullshit for a long time.
Well, I mean, the example that I use, and again, we want Hal's teaching, current teaching on this, because I recall when, for instance, if you had you're making blue jeans and you went and got a new sewing machine that was better, it would make the person faster. Your productivity might go up 10% because you get, instead of 100 right. blue jeans a day, you're making 110 with the same amount of people. And
the problem with this productivity argument is, one, we have a central bank that's inflating.
Right.
Right. And then two, we have all kinds of restrictions.
Right.
On the ability to supply energy. So you combine those two things, and what Musk said is just impossible.
Leave the policy environment alone. You want to start, but you want to actually build out the energy infrastructure for this. First off, it's going to take 20 years.
Yeah.
All right. Which, by the way, means that you can't connect anything until then, because otherwise your lights don't work at the house. That's a problem.
Yeah.
But then the other thing that goes along with that is the presumption that Elon makes is that infrastructure's free.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of things have been free to him.
It's free to him. Well, it's free to industrialists because they have the same unit for that.
Well, I get that, but you got to deduct that back out of the productivity change.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like we're going to have
And, Chief, that's exactly what happened with the stuff in the 70s and 80s and 90s, okay, is that the reason you saw the drop wasn't because the word processor wasn't faster than a typewriter. It is, okay? That's not the problem. The problem is I had to buy the computer. I had to pay for the power to run it. I had to pay for the cooling, the increased cooling demand in the building. You know, people have very little understanding of how this actually works unless you've actually run a business like this. I put my house, the office room that I'm sitting in right now in my house, is consistently a couple degrees warmer than the next room over. All right. Why? Because the machine's on. If you're in an office and I got 200 of these, I got to pay the power bill, not just to run the machine. Then I got to pay the power bill for the air conditioner and get the heat out of the building.
Well, we're running out. It sounds like we're going to have quite the show when we do this. two things. The Levi's, if you send them all overseas, I think your efficiency went to infinite, right?
Well, for here, yeah.
But you know, the one thing about this, the efficiency of the word processor versus the typewriter, you guys might be both a hair young, or me a hair too old. You have no idea how good, I use the term, those secretaries were and how fast they were.
Oh, yes,
they were awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not so sure they couldn't get a letter out faster than a regular person could on a processor.
Well, Chief, do you remember the old union checkers in the grocery store?
I'll tell you one thing. You didn't want to get clocked by one of those women when they were manual machines. How strong were their arms?
but the speed with which they could run a mechanical cash register.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't have to look at it.
I tell you what.
No, they were amazing.
If you insulted her and she turned around and smacked you, you were going down.
Yeah,
because that was really hard to do. I mean, how long would it take? You guys are, bright.
They probably knew all the prices, too.
If somebody nuked the world and there was no electricity, how long would it take, if somebody couldn't find one somewhere, for somebody to reinvent the mechanical cash register, or even a mechanical
cash register? Well, yeah, just go to a New York bodega and you'll find them everywhere.
Well, it wouldn't be very difficult to, but the thing is, the problem is the skill set.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I was the one that got one of the reasons that the grocery industry came in there is that the unions, when they didn't like the deal that they were offered, they went on strike, and then the managers were the ones that ended up having to run the cash registers. The problem is they weren't skilled at it.
Yeah. Not to mention their hand would be cramping up after 20 minutes.
Well, yeah, but they didn't have the skill set, so the lines would be halfway around the store.
For those we got to go, but for those who don't know what the hell we're talking about. You had all the little numbers on the machine, right? You had a press. Yeah. So the ladies would press the numbers, but in order to make them do something, you had to punch the thing next to it, which would punch the numbers into the machine. And then when you got to the point where you wanted them totaled, you pulled on this big lever, or you punched an even bigger thing.
A Vegas slot machine.
Or some had just a bigger thing you really had to punch. And you're talking about hard,
Yeah.
I mean, somebody who, I remember...
It was all mechanical advantage, yeah. And then the later ones actually were motorized, but still, it was even so. I mean, even the old adding machines that were motorized, it was your accuracy and speed that made them work.
There were people, there was a guy, final comment, I promise. We had a guy at Pullman named Bob Poshek, terrific guy. He used to be a stringer for Taylor Bell. You know what a stringer is? Before you had, computers and stuff, they had stringers were guys who went out and covered a high school game, and called in with a phone right after the game, gave Taylor Bell the score, and maybe a comment on who was the leading scorer. And he probably had 100 of these people all across the city.
Oh, wow.
That reported on the games. Because that way, how else could you find out whether Brother Rice beat St. Rita? I mean, if somebody wasn't there, right?
Where I coach with my brother Ryan, the coaches called it in to the report.
Well, but there was a few people, my mother said she knew a guy like this. He could add as fast as anybody could print.
Yeah.
Just in his head. So our controller used to piss him off totally. The guy smoked the pipe. He'd be putting the numbers, and he had the super fast hands on his calculator, right? I could never do that. But he's flying away, read the numbers right before he could hit the total. This guy Bob would say, here's the number. just to piss him off. But he never believed he was right. He was right all the time because he just didn't want to read him the numbers and take his word for it, right? Oh. So he had to do it himself. But the guy was always right, just pissed him off totally. Anyway, we're going to have this combined group. Hell, we'll see you Friday. Carl, enjoy yourself wherever you're doing. SP Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 60. We're down some from the morning, but we're still up. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.